Friends with Brews.
I have a sound clip that'll play later.
Yeah, you used a sound clip.
No, I have a sound clip that I'll play later that you sent me. You probably don't even remember sending it to me now.
I probably don't.
Ha!
But who are you for me to be sending you sound clips?
It's in the show notes. My name is Scott.
For that matter, who am I?
What the hell?
What is going on?
Something is playing music in your house.
There's a lady downstairs playing with my Sonos, and she probably just told it to play everywhere. This was not planned. Oh. Give me a second.
That's hilarious.
Either that or...
It just stopped.
It's either that or the A word hurt. Alexa, what did you just hear? Yeah, because I stopped it.
I haven't heard anything in the last minute. You can listen to all your requests in the privacy section of the Alexa app.
I don't know if that's the kind of music she'd be listening to or not. Anyway, where were we?
I don't know. I'm Scott. You're Peter. We have brews.
We have brews. What are you having for... But wait, what kind of bruises are we talking about today, Scott?
I've already got mine in the show notes. I have a Cuava San Marcos Honduras. It's rich and chocolatey. It has pear, brown sugar, and baker's chocolate.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's pretty good. It's not as amazing as that sounds, but that could also be because I need to experiment a little with the grind and maybe the brew on this.
Okay.
Not all coffees are the same, but I tend to grind them the same and brew them the same.
Really? Not all coffees are the same?
Huh. Oh.
I mean, there are a lot of people who...
Ooh, that's good, though.
...probably don't realize that.
That's pretty good. I think I would buy that again. I'll have to experiment with the grind a little bit and see if I can get it just a little smoother. That's pretty good.
Well, I, sir, am drinking a Counterculture Slow Motion.
Hmm.
And as the name may imply, it is decaf.
Peter is in slow... Oh.
Because I'm drinking decaf. This is actually my fourth cup of coffee for the day. I had three cups this morning before like 9 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't eat anything until after like 1 o'clock. And that's when I finally had a lunch break.
Uh-huh.
So,
and do you...
Counterculture.
How's
slow motion.
Bladder doing?
Decaf. Yeah. So Counterculture, Slow Motion, Decaf. I like this. I don't know. I've had one of their other coffees. I think called 46. I don't remember if we talked about that on the show yet or not. But I like it. And this is good. It's tasty. It's just a tiny bit more acidic than I like. Because when I go to decaf, I just go usually with the Wegmans store brand decaf espresso roast. Anyway, I like Counterculture. Like I said, slightly more acidic than I like, but good. This is definitely a drinkable coffee. I probably will buy it again eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But I am trying to vary and branch out a little bit and try new coffees.
Yeah,
so every time I go to the store, I buy a different cup of something or a different bag of something.
Yeah. I'm definitely trying to do that too. But my problem is it also affects my wife because coffee bags are expensive. We both drink coffee, and it's pretty rare that I can justify buying a stash for myself.
And I can be price sensitive with things.
Yeah.
And as you've heard me say it many times on this show, my default coffee is just the Wegmans store brand espresso roast.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it.
Yeah.
I don't buy it just because it's like one of the cheapest things. I think the Dunkin' Donuts stuff might be cheaper.
Yeah.
It's really my favorite coffee that I can get at the store. So I go to something like this, which costs maybe twice as much as theirs. And I'm like, okay, it was fun to try. I'm going back to the old reliable, you know?
Yeah. And that's fair. Like coffee is one of those things where I don't know why, but the way I brew it maybe is more sensitive to it, but it's easy to get a bitter cup of coffee if you're not careful. And a lot of coffees that people like aren't that smooth. And
yeah,
we are also people that tend to fall back on a couple really beloved favorites. And
yep.
I do say beloved. By the way, I also have the very flat and very rectangular chocolate chip cookie that my wife made. This is homemade. Anyway, it's good with coffee.
I imagine it would be. Before we go on, a question. Your favorite recording software for the Mac, you're using Audio Hijack Pro, is that correct?
Audio Hijack.
And Audio Hijack.
It's just called Audio Hijack now.
Oh, it's not, okay. So it's if I was to buy it, it's okay because I'm not a pro when it comes to this.
You will be if you buy it.
And that's Rogue Amoeba software, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait. Are they just Rogue Amoeba?
Yeah.
Rogue Amoeba. Okay. So I use Piezo because it's charmingly simple.
Right.
Charmingly simple.
It's a little too simple. It's a little too charming.
Well, I'm starting to get to that point. There are things when I would like to be able to do with, for example, does Audio Hijack support the mute function? Can you mute while you're on a recording? I'm going to go with no, because you're thinking about this way too much.
I think the answer is no, because I'm not 100% sure. I'm trying to remember if you mute it, if it will also pause that recording. What you want it to do is keep rolling and fill the track with silence no matter what's going on.
Correct.
I think the answer is no.
Okay. Okay. No, that's fine. I was just curious about that. That is a feature that I'm kind of missing. So I was just wondering if that was going to be filled by that gap.
The Snowball is USB, right?
It is. USB old, which means I have it running through an adapter to get onto my MacBook now. What is Fission? Rogue Amoeba Fission.
Fission is just a very simple audio editor. I actually use it for... What do I use it for? I use it for making clips, like a lot of the sound clips that I have in my soundboard.
Okay.
They go through Fission, so I can normalize them and clip off parts that I don't want, or join sections together and chop out stuff in the middle, stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's not something you would use to edit a podcast, but it's certainly something you can use to clean up audio files for general purpose use.
Okay. I don't do much of that. And the Audio Hijack folks, they're pretty contained to audio stuff, right? They don't do like screen captures and stuff?
Like, correct. That's right.
Screen flow or whatever. Okay. I'm just curious. Okay. All right. I think that's all the questions I have right now.
The piece of software of theirs that I use in order for you to hear the soundboard, for me to be able to play the soundboard and you to hear it, that's Loopback. And basically what I can do in Loopback is create a microphone, a virtual microphone that's really my mic plus Farrago, which is the soundboard app.
Farrago.
Yeah. And so that means that it all comes through the microphone setting in FaceTime, so you can hear it too.
Okay. Cool. All right. I feel like I've gotten a little bit of education.
I was trying to see if there was a USB version of what I'm using for my mic, because it's got a capacitive touch. See, I just muted it. All I have to do is touch the top of the box and it goes mute. It's called a Wave XLR. It allows me to set things like clipping protection. I listen to my headphones through it. My mic goes into it. My mic's an XLR though. And then volume, gain, all that kind of stuff, in addition to the mute. And the nice thing about the mute is I can set whatever colors I want when it's recording, when it's taking input, and whatever colors I want when it's muted. So I know when this thing is muted. All I have to do is look at it and look at the LEDs, and I know that I'm on mute or not. It's really
cool.
Nice. But
that's cool.
The fact that they call it Wave XLR makes me think there must be a USB version, but right now I'm failing to find one on their website.
Something like Wave USB? Wave DX. I don't know. All right. Well, anyway.
Anyway, whatever. Who cares?
Exactly. Who cares? Well, obviously we do. But that's not why we're here today. What are we here to talk about and record about and things? Mission, quest, thing.
You got to look at the website for Hollywood Theater. There is this theater in Portland.
Portlandia?
Called Hollywood Theater. It's in the Hollywood District of Portland.
Yeah.
And it's a theater that's been around for a long, long, long time. It's historic, but it's basically kept going by donors and members. And so basically people will buy memberships and make donations, and that's what allows them to keep going. They've got 70 millimeter projectors, which are really hard to find now. And so they're always on the lookout for trying to find backup equipment and find replacement equipment and stuff like that. But anyway, the version of 2001 that we watched on Saturday, they had made specially for them, because when they first opened Hollywood Theater a long time ago, or reopened, I can't remember, they had a copy of 2001 and it wasn't that great. So they actually got themselves working with the movie company and some 70 millimeter film producers, of which there's only one company that deals it anymore. They actually got themselves a custom reel or however many reels. They got a custom copy of 2001 in 70mm, and it's really nice. It looked really good. It was a lot of fun. This place is crazy. They've got a pipe organ, and it's a real pipe organ. All the pipes are behind the screen. They weren't doing anything with it when we were there, but they can. You would love this place. I wish we would have gone to this place when you were here.
Sounds kind of cool.
And you can sit in there and eat slices of pizza and drink beer while you watch the movies.
I mean, that sounds even better.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So what else are we talking about?
I don't know. What do you got?
So I have been, as you know, I have been using Edge, Microsoft Edge, the Chromium-based version.
I know.
Pretty much since it came out. And overall, I liked it. And I liked the synchronization across platforms. I liked not having another Google thing as my primary everything.
I understand that.
And it just plain does not work with some websites.
So here's the thing. I know that a lot of people hate Firefox, but Firefox actually is not a pig anymore. It's actually a better performer now than Chrome.
They go through phases, though, don't you think? I mean, you know, they go through cycles.
So does Google. Google is a resource hub.
Oh, absolutely. This is why I wanted to stop using Chrome for the longest time, and I did.
But is Microsoft Edge that much better? It's based on Chromium.
It's based on Chromium, yes. But there's a lot of stuff that both Google and Chromium are, I mean, Microsoft are adding after the fact that really significantly changes the browser.
Right, but my impression was the engine itself is pretty garbagey.
I don't know about that. I mean, we've got, wait, how many different versions are there now? There's WebKit and there's Chromium?
No, WebKit's not Chromium.
Right, but that's two. Those are two engines. Are there any others? Or is everything WebKit and Chromium these days?
I don't know what Firefox is using, to be honest. Firefox is using their own, aren't they?
I don't even remember. I feel like I should know this, and I feel stupid for asking.
It uses the Gecko rendering engine.
Latest version of Firefox uses Gecko. Safari and Chrome use WebKit. There we go. So it's Safari that's using WebKit.
I don't believe that Chrome uses WebKit anymore. Chrome used to use WebKit, and then they forked it off into Chromium. It's not the same as WebKit anymore.
Okay, so 7 years ago.
Yes. 7 years ago, they did use WebKit. Then they forked.
So developer.mozilla.org has a document that says applications based on WebKit or Blink, such as Safari and Chrome, blah, blah, blah. Now, that document was updated in September, but that doesn't mean it's current.
I don't think Chrome uses WebKit.
Why don't we ask? Let's go and say, is Chromium based on WebKit? Is Chromium based on Firefox? WebKit rendering engine, share between Safari and Chromium. So says Chromium.org.
But here back in, it does, but I remember back in, fact, here's a link right here on 2013 saying it was built on WebKit and then they forked it. And in Wikipedia under WebKit, it says WebKit is used as the rendering engine in Safari and was formerly used by Google Chrome. Chrome used only WebCore and included its own JavaScript engine. I know Chrome has its own JavaScript engine because that V8 JavaScript engine is what Node uses. That's definitely different than WebKit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So the iOS version of Firefox uses WebKit because I don't think you have
they have no choice,
right?
Yeah. Apple doesn't let anybody. They have no choice.
Exactly. Exactly. But yes, it uses Gecko. It does use Gecko. But does Chrome? Okay. Is Chromium still use WebKit? I'm not sure it does.
That's the question I was just answering.
And the answer was what?
Chromium.org. No.
We do not actually use the layer Apple calls WebKit.
See?
Got it. Okay, so what's it called? It's a rendering engine?
Chromium.
Okay, so it's just its own thing.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, got it. WebKit. No. Chromium, yes. Okay, so we have three major things out there. WebKit, Chromium, and Gecko.
And I would wager that any other weird browsers probably use Chromium too.
Opera?
I don't know. I haven't looked at Brave. Is Opera even still a thing?
Brave is just Firefox.
No. Is it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
No. Brave is...
Isn't it?
No, it's based on Chromium. It says right here.
Okay, I told sorry. You. Everything... Tor is just Firefox. Tor is Firefox, just reskinned.
Brave... Can I say this out loud?
Brave
is like the browser that people who are paranoid but not real tech savvy go to. That's my impression.
Yes. Opera is Chromium based, and Vivaldi is just opera, right?
I don't pay attention. I don't see the point. I don't understand it.
Yes. Okay. So it's also Chromium based. So yeah. Yeah. I have not been paying a lot of attention to these alternate browsers.
Yeah. I haven't either.
I am starting to use Safari a little more just because there are some things that it does better, like integrating with Hide My Mail and SMS. When I get prompted for two-factor codes in a form fill, I can, you know, do that. So that's kind of cool. And it does integrate across all my Apple devices.
Yes.
It doesn't integrate across my Apple and Windows devices. And that's where Edge had the upper hand. But I'm actually now going through a phase where I'm segmenting off my browsing, and I'm actually using Chrome again for one reason, because I just found out about Chrome profiles, or just rediscovered them. I hadn't been using them for a while. So you can have a, you know, when you sign into the browser, you can sign into your Chrome browser with a Google account. And I have a number of different Google accounts. So it's nice because one of them is strictly for a client, one of them is for Paradigm, and one is for my personal stuff. Mm. So to have three different browsers, three different sets of extensions, three different sets of bookmarks, kind of cool. And it really, it's nice because I just fire up this browser, I become Peter at Paradigm, and boom, I see all my Paradigm tools. I come over to this client account, I have all those tools, and I come to personal, and I don't have any of those tools, but I've got my own Fastmail and other stuff that I want to see. So it's kind of neat.
That is really neat. Safari doesn't have anything like that. What it does have is it has tab groups. And I've been using tab groups. Like I've got a programming tab group. I've got a web development tab group. I've got actually different programming tab groups because I've got one for like Python right now that's stuffed with all the Python stuff that I'm learning. I've got one for Swift UI. But my main complaint about the way they do their tab groups is anytime you click a link in any other app, it jumps back to the default group and opens it in that. And I hate that. I hate that behavior. And not only that, if I have a window with like 20 tabs, a lot of times a link will just open in its own window. I don't want two windows. I want one window with a billion tabs.
I was getting really confused because I had Safari as my default browser, and somehow I was clicking links in Gmail and in Chrome, and it was spawning Safari.
Right.
And I was like, wait, where did that just go? Where did my email go? I'm so lost. So that was kind of funny. But I'm curious to hear a little bit about Python. Talk to me about Python, because I did use Python, like, it was 2003 when I dove into Python.
That was back in the Python 2 days, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, now there's a segmentation.
I liked it.
You have to choose. Are you going to use Python 2 or are you going to use Python 3? And I'm using Python 3.
If you're starting with new, you want 3, because 2 is like,
yeah,
it's going away rapidly.
Yeah. But the reason I started using it was I was playing with, I thought I would just write a quick script that gets a list of the people that follow me on Mastodon and keeps track of them. So over time, I'll be able to look at the changes in my followers. And the first library that I came across that looked like it would help me integrate with the Mastodon API was one called mastodon.py. So I thought, okay, I'll do this in Python. I've always wanted to actually program a utility or do something in Python anyway. We use it all the time at work, and I've looked at Python scripts and edited them, but I've just never actually sat down and wrote anything with it. So I started using it, and I'm really surprised at how full-featured Python 3 is. And the first thing I noticed was the logging, because in JavaScript with Node scripts, I use a third-party utility called Winston. And it's got super good logging. Well, Python has pretty much the same level of logging built right in now.
Yep.
So it's clear that they focused on certain specific things, and I really kind of like it. And as I go through, I'm finding that a lot of this stuff, I don't know if it's just because this is my nth language or if it's just because Python makes discovering some of the concepts easier, but figuring out how to do something that I would do in a Node script or some other language in Python has been really easy for me.
Okay. Yeah, I remember when I started with Python, and I mean, I've seen some Python 3, which it doesn't look materially, it's the same, you know, it's an evolution language, right?
Yeah, right.
Not apparently like, what, Perl 6. Apparently, I haven't even like followed, like, did Perl 6 even become a thing? And apparently they named it Raku and changed it, so it's so different, blah, 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 blah.
Didn't it become object-oriented at some point? Was that before
that was Perl
5?
Oh, okay. That was 5. Yeah.
Right. As the rest of the world moves away from objects, they become object oriented.
Right. Boom. Hey, we're catching up. Yeah. Well, I met Larry Wall in 2000, I want to say 2005. And he was presenting at a conference and he had the slide. If it was 2005, let's say it was 2005, and he had a slide and the projected release date for like real Perl 6 was 2004, a year prior. And I raised, he had any questions. I said, yes, are you still on target with that release date? And he looks at it and he turns around and says, yes. It became clearer over time, like it was never happening. And I was back, I was in the like the Perl, like Perl was like a thing for me, and I had all the books and I was everything I could program, I was programming in Perl. It was great, it was a lot of fun.
Is your name John Syracusa?
No.
Oh.
And then I did start playing around with Python, and I did really like it. And I thought the learning curve for Python was trivial easy to get started. Trivially easy.
Perl is a particularly obtuse language.
Not if you're already familiar with Bash and C.
I was familiar with C before I started with Perl, and Perl still looked like some asshole designed it just to piss people off.
It can be, but I used Perl as a better C than C. And if I, so that's why a lot of my Perl code looks like, it looks shockingly like C code. In fact, some of it could probably even compile. But that was for me, it was just like, oh, it's like C, only I don't need to declare my own string type and stuff like that. It was really cool. But Perl gets real hard real quick when you want to do like really fancy things.
Mm-hmm.
Python, I found the same way. It's like, you know, Python was like, wow, this is so easy. This is so easy. This is so easy. Wait, how the hell am I supposed to? I don't get it. It was like everything was going fine. And I got up to like 65 miles an hour. And then I hit this brick wall with like advanced data structures and things. I don't even remember exactly what it was that I couldn't wrap my head around. But for basic scripts and stuff, I liked it.
I think the fact that I just went through a longer learning curve with Node and a lot of that ecosystem and learning about some of the things that are typical with it really helped me come up to speed really fast on Python, like package management, mm-hmm. how to install packages locally so that you can develop them while you use them, etc. All that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I had to learn that the first time when I did it with JavaScript. And though it's different with Python, a lot of these languages do a lot of the same kinds of things now, as you would expect.
Right. So question on that. Did you consider Golang or Rust when you decided to learn this new programming language?
Rust looks interesting. Golang, I hate Go. I really do. And I know a lot of people like it. Part mm-hmm. of the problem I hate Go, though, isn't really Go's fault. Part of the problem I hate mm-hmm. Go is Go templating language's fault. And when we were messing okay. around using Hugo for the web, that's Go templating language. And it made me want to kill someone. And I still want to kill those people. But more appropriately, we use Python all the time at work. It's used for tons of different scripts that we have. It makes way more sense for me to dig into Python than it does for me to learn Go or Rust, because nobody in my job is going to be using those.
Yeah.
Isn't Rust a compiled language?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rust and Go are. They're both compiled. Yeah.
So the things I'm using Python for are like server scripts and utility things. Things that'll run on a server, they don't need to be super performant, but yeah.
Yep. And for those, I generally, if it's on Linux, I generally still drop into Perl.
Yeah.
And if it's really, really small, I'll do Bash. But otherwise, it's Perl. And if it's Windows, I try to do it in PowerShell. And again, for simple stuff, like it's easy. And then I get into some stuff with PowerShell syntax just wraps my brain.
It is weird, yeah.
I don't get it. It's like, wow, in Perl, I would just do this, but in PowerShell, I need to do this to this to this to this. But that's actually an interesting project. I should throw those over at ChatGPT. Like, how would I express this Perl code in PowerShell and see what it says? I'll bet you it can translate.
PowerShell's weird because one of the guys I work with is really pretty good at PowerShell. And I look at some of his stuff and I'm going, oh, that's great. And then I get to something and I'm like, how would you have ever known that? Like,
right, yeah, exactly. How am I supposed to know that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, boy. So, yes, I'm having fun with ChatGPT, though. It's interesting asking the things that I can throw in AI.
I guess it's not that I don't think it's fun. I know I've been cranky about it. What makes me cranky is the people who seem to take it super seriously, like it really is doing amazing things. It's regurgitating huge data sets.
Sure, but it's always people that are making you cranky. That's what they do. People make us cranky.
Well, it's not my fault that people are assholes. But no, but a lot of people, like, I think some people are overestimating what it's actually doing.
Yeah.
For example, when it comes to writing samples, it's a cliche machine. Like, it just scours a lot of bad literature. Clearly, nobody bought a bunch of expensive, really good books for it to read. Programming-wise, both Stack Overflow and GitHub claim that the problem with it is it creates reasonable-looking code that's wrong.
Right. I mean, wrong.
Right. And if you ask it logic questions, it also comes up with the incorrect answer. Like, it's not good at logic puzzles.
So what you're saying is before I turn any junior developers or analysts onto this thing, they really should know what they're doing first. Because otherwise, it's just going to be like just mashing fingers on a old school calculator and just trusting any number that you get back from it.
If you actually want to use this code, you will have to have somebody that does know what they're doing review every bit of it.
Right. Otherwise, you're just going to copy. Oh, this is what it told me. It's fine, right?
Yeah.
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 That's a problem. That's a problem.
But it's interesting. I just think that I'm a little worried about people's over-reliance on things they don't understand. I think we're seeing the evidence that the people who are religious about their tech and think they're changing the world aren't necessarily to be trusted. And the people that don't understand the tech aren't to be trusted either, because they'll believe in stuff that clearly is voodoo.
Huh? What do you mean? Don't trust my code.
Speaking of not trusting things, let's talk about Twitter real quick, because I've got about 10 minutes before I have to leave the house.
There's something to not be trusted. Yeah.
So,
because we haven't talked about Twitter in so long.
I know. But you sent me this sound clip a long time ago, and I meant to play it last time, and I didn't. But you can talk about this a little bit. What is Smashing Security?
Smashing Security is a podcast hosted by Graham Cluley and Carol Terrio. They're both ex-Sophos employees.
Ah.
It's funny. I'd say maybe it's my third or fourth favorite security podcast at this time. But yeah, it's pretty funny, and they generally have a good sense of humor. A lot of injected into their shows.
Yeah.
A lot of it's somewhat British humor because Graham is British. Mm-hmm. But I also really like a lot of their co-hosts, and that was where I found out about the CyberWire, because Dave Bittner is an occasional co-host. He's the host of the CyberWire. But they also have others who are interesting co-hosts. So I use them to find more sources of information. But anyway, yes, I sent you a clip from the Smashing Security podcast, but I don't remember which one it was.
Here it goes.
I thought he was spending $44 billion on buying Twitter. Turns out that's not the case.
Is it not?
No.
What's he buying?
What he's actually done is he's spent $44 billion promoting another service, which many people won't have heard of before, called Mastodon.
Yes. Yes. Twitter, yes. Yes, exactly.
You know who Joshua Topolsky is, right? Josh Topolsky, whatever he calls himself. He's the guy that started The Verge way back in the day.
Oh, okay. Sure.
He's not the guy that runs it now, but he started it. And he claims, and he has screenshot evidence of his claim, that links to Mastodon are getting flagged as sensitive material on Twitter now. I'm talking about general links to Mastodon, not links to specific sensitive content on Mastodon.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that.
Yeah, but they're just not even trying to pretend not to abuse their position anymore. I mean, the Twitter files thing should have told everybody. They basically just handed over all private internal communication to a couple journalists,
mm-hmm.
which seems insane to me, but whatever.
Whew.
So yeah. I don't use Twitter anymore. I don't have Twitter on any of my devices. I don't go there anymore. I've made my Twitter accounts private. And if you try to tweet at Friends with Brews on Twitter, I won't reply because I won't be looking. So use the link for the Friends with Brews account on Mastodon and go there, and I will respond.
Interesting. Okay.
I just can't stomach it anymore because it really has gotten worse, and I really feel like it's just becoming a raging far-right love fest with Elon Musk, and every time he says something incredibly stupid, all his fanboys pile on.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who says anything halfway reasonable just gets dog-piled.
You see, this is a little bit of a mystery for me, because I assumed that a number of his fanboys, I mean, if they're fanboys first, then okay, I get it. I assumed that a bunch of his fanboys were eco-friendly, eco-warrior, tree-huggers, left-leaning liberals.
You would think so. But you know what's funny is I don't think Elon Musk ever really was. I don't think that's why he got into the electric car business, because right now Twitter is pushing a lot of anti-climate change conspiracy theories.
This is depressing.
It is.
It's worse that so a good friend, my running buddy, a couple weeks ago, sent me a picture of himself on his commute into the office. He works down at MIT. He sends a picture of himself, and he's wearing a beanie, and it says SpaceX.
Oh no!
And he says, "This used to be my favorite hat. Now I'm not so sure." And I sent him a picture of my Tesla, and I said, "This used to be my favorite car, and now I'm not so sure."
Yeah, his beanie's a little more easily replaced than your car.
I bought him a replacement beanie for Christmas. So, yes, I already replaced his beanie for him. He has not yet reciprocated by giving me a Kia EV6 or anything. But I'm hopeful. I'm still hopeful.
I mean, red isn't my favorite color in the world, but there's no way I would ever wear any kind of red hat now. At all. Ever. I do have a red sweatshirt, upgrade sweatshirt that I bought a few years ago, and I still wear it, but red doesn't do good things to me anymore. It's similar to that. It'd be like if I had a red beanie, a red cap, a red baseball cap of some kind. Like if I was a Cardinals fan or something, or, you know, whatever, Phillies or something. And then I'd be like, I don't care. I know that it's got a different logo on it, but I don't care. I can't wear this stupid red hat anymore.
It's really sad, but understandable.
Not really, because it's not the greatest color. That's what's funny, is like it just goes back to Trump's inherent bad taste. That's what he picked. That's what he picked to be associated with. But whatever.
I like it.
Anyway.
Oh man.
So I heard you talking with Adam today, not talking today, but I heard it today because it came out today, on Blurring the Lines, and you were saying that so far your nose situation is going well.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You can blow your nose now?
I can blow my nose with wild abandon. And so far, no repercussions.
Good.
So, yes. Yes, I'm very happy. I felt for a little bit, it was about 2 days ago, I blew my nose a little bit and I had a little bit, I thought for sure I smelled blood.
Oh, no.
And I thought that I had re-injured, you know, reopened the wound. And didn't happen. I was hallucinating. I was just being paranoid. So that was kind of cool.
Well, if you're going to hallucinate, I can think of, we should come up with a list of other things, because there's better things than blood, bloody noses to hallucinate about.
Gross. Gross. Oh, brother.
Anyway.
What else we got?
That's pretty much it for me.
All right. No, that's good, because we're getting close to time. You've got something else to do.
I did. Yeah, I do. I did give you guys some feedback, though, on your podcast, because Adam was talking about making bread, and you suggested beer bread.
I did.
And I have to say that not only does beer bread help with the dough rising process, it's just really freaking good.
Yeah. Makes me wonder. I have this, like, 14% alcohol chocolate 14%. Raspberry beer. And I can't drink it.
Okay, the point isn't for the bread to make you drunk, Peter.
Well, the thing is, I can't. Well, all the alcohol would bake out, but I can't drink it, though, because it's a pint. And I tried drinking one of these like almost a year ago when I got it, and I was like, I could only get a third of the way through. I'm like, I literally cannot finish this. It's too sweet. It's too strong. It's too syrupy. But I'm wondering if I was to put that into a loaf of pumpernickel. Raspberry chocolate pumpernickel bread. I'm just gonna leave it right on that note. Just see what happens.
You're gonna push the big red beer bread?
Big red beer button. Yeah, big red beer button.